Welcome to Voices in Value-Based Care. I'm Matt Fusen. Thanks for tuning in. The movement to value-based care is revolutionizing how healthcare providers get reimbursed for delivery of care. On this program, we explore stories from the field about how real organizations are dealing with this change. You can follow the show on Twitter at hashtag VoicesInVBC and follow SPH on Twitter at SPH Analytics. On the program today, I am talking with Brad Bostic, founder, chairman, and CEO of HC1, and Dr. Peter Plantis, physician executive at HC1. Welcome to the show. It's great to have you both.
Thanks.
Thank you.
We're very interested in hearing more about your work in leveraging lab data to drive personalized healthcare and the work you've been doing related to COVID-19 recently. But before we dive into that, tell us a little about yourself, how you got here, and we'll start with Brad.
Sure thing, Matt. Well, my focus has really been on bringing a more personalized approach to healthcare throughout my career with a variety of different modalities, including delivering telemedicine, dealing with interoperability in healthcare, and really with the emergence of the movement to value-based care, saw an opportunity back in the 2011 timeframe to start HC1 with a focus of improving lives with high-value care by eliminating waste and bringing a more personalized approach to healthcare. And to do that, we've really tapped into what we view as incredibly valuable data, which is the information that's coming from laboratories. If you think about the story that laboratory data tells, it's really whether you're healthy or sick or somewhere in between in your healthcare journey, you're always going to have a lab test performed. And with that information, you can actually understand what's happening in order to optimize the delivery of care at scale. And so at HC1, we're improving lives with high value care by transforming lab data into personalized healthcare insights. And we ensure that the right patient gets the right test so they're diagnosed accurately and as early as possible, and then also ultimately the right medication therapy. So when you think about the parallels to our core mission and the business that we're in, and what has to be done to combat the spread of COVID-19, it's all about that same concept. How do you ensure the right patient gets the right test and then ultimately the right prescription? And so that's what we're gonna talk about here today. And I'll turn it over to Dr. Pete to share his background a bit, because he's been a really key player in this operation.
Excellent.
I'm Dr. Peter Plantis. I was trained as a clinical internist, and I was in practice direct face-to-face with patients individually every day for more than a dozen years. I always had a passion to translate what you do for one patient to provide the best medicine that's personalized to them to how do we do that across a broad population. And it's been a wonderful journey. I've had the opportunity to work with national hospital coalitions that are more than 2,000 hospitals, executive CEO of physician practices that were over 1,000 physicians. And I've always been motivated to bring the best of care and translate what science says we should do and could do, and then make sure it happens in an organized way to the population. I came to HC1 about 6 months to a year ago, really focused on working with HC1 because they have these amazing tools for precision medicine that are specific to patients, but draw in the data from like half the United States in terms of laboratory values. And as you'll hear in this conversation, we've been able to rapidly deploy all that technology, all that talent, and all that precision approach to patients, to communities, broader communities, and even micro communities of employers and universities, to bring what's specifically needed to both prevent and to identify COVID cases.
Excellent. Thank you both for that. Let's dive right in. So tell me and kind of provide an overview of the CV19 lab testing dashboard that you all have, the local risk index, and how local communities are using this free offering to respond to the pandemic.
Yeah, so like many people in the healthcare industry, when we saw this pandemic beginning to flare up here in the United States, we felt that it was imperative for us to get involved and do our part. And as we looked at our assets and our capabilities that we've put in place over many years, we've got more than 22,000 lab testing locations that are connected into the HC1 secure cloud platform that we're able to, in real time, transform into a clear level of risk measurement called the local risk index, all the way down to an individual community like a county or even down to a public use microdata area. And this is truly real time, which is a sub-county, by the way. They call it a PUMA, so not to use terms that nobody understands. But so effectively what we're able to deliver, though, is this capability that's been very elusive, which is providing public health professionals, healthcare providers, other policymakers, like the AEI Institute that's led by Dr. Scott Gottlieb, for example, who's leveraging this, to see truly black and white, accurate indications of risk in real time, which is actually predictive of what's going to happen in a community as much as 3 weeks in advance of the more public health reporting systems that are driven more by survey information, aggregated information that ends up just inevitably getting a bit distorted and delayed along the journey. Whereas we're taking this high fidelity indication of whether or not an individual patient and longitudinally tracking whether or not patients are testing positive using the PCR test, which is highly sensitive and specific. We've also added in the antibody testing and the results there. Okay. And so as Pete mentioned, it's about half of all the lab volume in the United States is flowing in real time. And we were very fortunate to be in a situation where we could quickly mobilize our partners across the country to bring this CV19 lab testing dashboard live, which can be found at cv19dashboard.org. And by merely registering, we're providing free access to that insight.
What I would add is that Brad mentioned it's weeks in advance of the LRI is weeks in advance of showing a trend of a local community. Think of it like your satellite town outside of a city, a suburb. We get down to that level and we can show that the prevalence of positive tests compared to a baseline that's safe, which is 1%, okay, is rising. And we'll see that day by day and we'll see that on a weekly average. Now, why is that important? Is because the conversion of a prevalence of positive tests that are being done across the community is a leading indicator that COVID is going to start to blossom in that community versus later indicators such as hospital admissions. Those generally happen 2 weeks down the road, if not even three, after the person is first infected. And a transfer to ICUs, We track nationally, you'll see it on a number of sites, how many people are in ICUs from this. Well, that's anywhere from 3 to 4 weeks after the people are both got infected. And as soon as they get infected, they're infectious to everybody else. That's the time in the community you have to take action if you're going to get in front of the pandemic rather than just chasing huge numbers in your hospitals. So this LRI is a very sensitive test. And in the three generations, just over the past few months of updating and upscaling the data that we're reporting on cv19dashboard.org, you're able to see the trend over day to day and time in a graphic. And we actually also calculate the current week average, the current 7 days, versus the previous 7 days. And that acts like almost like a gyroscope on the front of a plane. Are things tipping up or are things tipping down? You will not clear a COVID outbreak until that decline of week over week is occurring at least for a couple weeks, okay, to bring it back into the safe zone.
And I had a chance to play with it a little bit, and it is quite impressive how you can drill in and do lots of stuff with the data. And then as we were prepping for this, we started talking about another product that you all have, a new product called Workforce Advisor that was really interesting. Tell us a little bit more about that, Brad.
Yeah, as we saw the usage patterns of the CV19 dashboard increasing and spreading across the country, we saw a number of corporations and universities beginning to indicate that it was very helpful to see these acceleration, deceleration in more of a sensitive way in their communities. But they were saying, hey, manually aligning that with where everybody lives and where they work is a pretty painstaking process. It's almost impossible if you're dealing with tens of thousands of people. It would take an army of people to manage all that. And so,
right,
based on feedback from the hundreds of employers and dozens of university leaders, we decided to provide an enterprise class capability that really brings this into the scope of what's needed to get people safely back to work and keep them there, or get students safely back to universities and keep them there, by automatically connecting the locations, both in terms of where you live and where you work or go to school, with this local risk index measurement. And so you're automatically seeing which individuals should be tested potentially individually, which individuals should be in more of the pool testing kind of group, what's happening in your overall community outside of the corporation or the university, so you can put in place the right protocols on whether or not you should be bringing people back into those offices, and then ultimately making it very efficient and easy for the individuals who need to be tested to literally be notified that they should be tested, click on a link. It allows them to schedule where they'll get tested, allows them to have the time specified, and then ultimately they drive up and they can get that done, and it's all connected into a digital health ID. So it's effectively an end-to-end enterprise class solution that's optimized around using the most important metric, which is this live understanding of the actual testing values, and connecting that into these specific corporations or universities in such a way that allows them to effectively have control and coordination over what's otherwise a very complicated, you know, right, almost impossible environment.
Yeah, that's it's a really slick tool that we had a chance to look into. Let me ask a question. Oh, sorry, go ahead, Dr. Pete.
No, I wanted to add to that. I wanted to link it back to my original comment about why I came to work with Brad, and I was so impressed with this platform. It's cloud-based. It's elastic enough that it literally could handle the laboratory COVID testing, plus a whole lot more testing for all 330 million Americans. It's that elastic, and it can handle that much data. At the same time, it's brilliant because it can come down, as we said, to a state, to a county, to a sub-county called Pumas, okay, to a local area where the students or the employees actually live, little less the local community where the office is that you're trying to manage. And when you get down to that office level or that dormitory on a campus, I like to call that a micro community. Now, it may have an office, may have, you know, 400, 500 people in it, but that's micro compared to the, you know, the data that's coming together across millions across a state, mm-hmm, tens of thousands in a community. And the ability with the command center that comes with the Workforce Advisor platform, you then drill down to each individual employee, each individual student, and you can manage from the scope of the whole country to the exposure in their home community versus their office community, right down to that individual that's sitting on the west wing of the fifth floor in pod A. And you can see the local epidemiology between the six coworkers, okay, that are sitting there. It's a brilliant translation of macro data into precision micro execution at the level of each individual. And that, I mean, that, right, there is nothing like this for an epidemiologist that typically works over delayed paper reports and they don't even get all the data, this is a quantum warp leap in terms of being able to specifically manage against this pandemic.
And so where I wanted to go was kind of a little bit backwards and just say, okay, tell us about the infrastructure. So you've referenced 22,000 plus facilities or labs, over 50%. And of course, having all this in place allowed you to scale so quickly with COVID, but just give us a little bit more insight into that infrastructure and you know, does it tie in lab vendors, health systems, hospitals, what all is coming together there?
Yeah, well, when you think about our mission of improving lives with high value care, and you look at the challenge that has existed historically, the way that the incentives have worked in fee for service and the way that we've put in place systems across healthcare, we've really ended up in a one size fits all trial and error kind of model. And we all recognize that, whether you've been through a healthcare experience or you're a physician who deals with being overworked and stressed to the edge because you've got 7-minute patient visits and there's no way to bring together all that information. What we've really done is said every patient deserves to have this personalized healthcare journey. And the way to do that at scale from a precision medicine perspective is to ensure that they're getting the right test and the right prescription. And so to do that, you need to be able to bring together data in a way that is much smarter and really different than what has historically been done, which has been very siloed. So from day one, this whole strategy was born in the cloud. Going back to the previous couple of companies I've built, they've been truly cloud-centric architectures, which is different from somebody just moving legacy software systems into a cloud environment where you don't benefit of the true. Yeah, and you know that, Matt, from your experience and what you lived through in your company, that everybody sort of puts lipstick on whatever sort of livestock they've got and they call it cloud.
Yep.
So we had the benefit because of our vintage of starting from scratch and really being born in the cloud. And we went with AWS partly because that was what I was familiar with and our architects were familiar with, partly because I've had a relationship with Andy Jassy for a number of years and just have been incredibly impressed with the capabilities they've brought to bear, and because they had really decided to commit to healthcare as a key area. Mm-hmm. So they were willing to enter into a business associates agreement and provide incredible levels of security that are just mind-blowing relative to what could have been done, you know, 10 years ago or so. So AWS is our underlying infrastructure provider. And then in terms of the architecture, we've built this very powerful user access control model that allows us to, in a healthcare HIPAA-centric manner, enable the individual healthcare providers who need to action on a given patient need and have the need to know the detailed personal health information to access that securely. But then at the aggregate level, to be able to bring together longitudinal information on a patient journey while it's de-identified. So as you know, that's a pretty challenging thing because oftentimes when you go to the aggregate, you lose the denominator. So you don't know because of the fact that you've put it in the de-identification process and it wasn't designed cloud native like we have been, you couldn't tell, for example, if there are 5 positive tests, are those the same person being tested 5 times?
That's
Is that 5 separate people testing positive? Well, what, you know, guess what? When people have COVID, they get tested at least a couple of times to make sure that they're negative. And so that's really creating a mess in terms of the more publicly health, you know, reported health data. So our infrastructure goes through this very powerful user access control and into a refinery that uses machine learning to also harmonize all of this insight. So it enriches and standardizes all of this lab data at scale. In fact, we have over 160 million unique patient profiles across more than 22 billion lab results, growing by more than 500 million a month. So this is unprecedented scale in terms of what we're bringing together. And all that infrastructure was already in place. And so we were able to immediately mobilize within weeks and have both our CV19 lab testing dashboard and then followed by a few weeks later, the Workforce Advisor. And this is real battle-tested enterprise-grade capability that was always our strategy. And now it's just focused on one specific disease state. But that's a little bit of infrastructure background for you.
I would emphasize, though, that we're demonstrating the single application of this precision medicine platform for COVID, but it's all up and going and being applied for broad-based medical conditions. All the liver tests are there. All the CBCs are there. All the cholesterol measurements are there. All the pharmacy dispensing data is there. So you know who is on a cholesterol-lowering drug, and you can link in this cloud-based environment, what are their liver tests? What are their cholesterol tests over time for that individual? Are they not getting a particular bump or reduction in their cholesterol? Oh, let's add another lab variable, genomics. Genomics will show that you can't metabolize that cholesterol drug. Put them on another one and demonstrate over the next 6 months, their cholesterol comes down. And what have you done? You've avoided the missed clinical situation of inadequate care for someone with cholesterol. And what you're doing is helping prevent that person's heart attack. This is laser precision in bringing all this data together. And what has happened in the last 6 months is the advent of COVID and everybody's realization that this is a threat to the entire world, the ability to use these precision tools to act quickly, to know where and when and how to react to get in front instead of chasing the pandemic.
And Dr. Pete, this is a little bit different than some of what we prepped about, but Brad and Dr. Pete, who are the users of the tools? Is it a, you know, multiple persona type of tool? Kind of sounds like it to me, but the interesting, who are the main users?
Yeah, so with respect to our overall precision testing and prescribing solutions, it tends to start at the C-suite with the chief medical officer, the CFO, CEO, and their teams that are looking at eliminating or minimizing clinical variation and looking at how they can perform under these value-based care arrangements in particular. So the ideal partners that HC1 works with are the more progressive healthcare leaders who have decided to lean into value-based care. If you're stuck in the old paradigm, you know, 100% fee for service, this is valuable and it's the right thing to do because you've got unbelievable double-digit percentages of your people who are getting misdiagnosed or medicated improperly, and they're getting sick, they're dying. It's really tragic.
Right.
So that's what drives us every day. But the C-suite is really the starting point, and then it cuts across that health plan and the health system who are collaborating together. But then when you drive down into the details, it gets to those individuals who run the lab stewardship initiative. So that's kind of a subset of a clinical variation initiative. Oftentimes that tends to be a clinical leader who has the ancillary services as part of their responsibility. So probably that person that owns lab, pharmacy, you know, radiology potentially as areas of focus. And this is going to help them ensure that they're steering patients and identifying risky patients in a way that's very laser focused. So unlike the traditional model of like macro level pop health, this is actually precision health insight down to the individual where you can drive action. So then when you get all the way to the level of driving the action in real time, we've actually got pharmacists who get incorporated into the process wherein they're looking at the high risk individuals who are on multiple medications, identifying whether or not those people might be at risk to have some kind of a pharmacogenetic implication in their meds. And then ultimately those individuals are using the HC1 tools to generate a medication action proposal that gets provided right to the physician. So it's basically automating what already happens, which is these physicians refer to their pharmacists to help them out. But we're doing this in a targeted, laser-focused way that brings precision medicine at scale. So it starts at the C-level, works down into that clinical variation team, gets to the individual who's responsible for lab and prescribing, and then goes all the way down to the users who are driving the action, because we want to bring things that you can act upon to make healthcare truly better.
And we're finding the big new channel, as I call it, the what doorway to come into a healthcare organization most healthcare systems and very many hospitals have a component of trying to get ready for the more pay for performance type contracting, okay, that's emerging. It's a smaller percent now than fee for service, but everyone has that bet that it's going to explode quickly. And therefore, the population management executives, the finance officer that's particularly over the population management budget, they're looking for this exact performance that will make a huge differential in the outcomes of less illness, not more. And right, that pays huge dividends in direct revenue awards back to the organization that dropped the bottom line of the organization. And therefore, this instead of hiring 250 nurse case managers to be trying to chase down this data, the platform from HC1 brings this tailored dashboard that focuses down to the individual and the whole group under population management. Could that be the 30,000 health system employees? A perfect case example for application of this, whether it's for COVID, whether it's for cholesterol, or overall pharmacy, when there's multiple medications being given to a percent of the population, to manage those for less drug-drug interactions, more outcome, right, or precise medical care, and the avoidance of disastrous and costly drug genomic interactions, like we know can happen with Plavix, with massive right, life-threatening bleeds that cost tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars for that member of the population management group. So we're finding the executives and the finance officers and the medical officers that are very committed to not treating more disease for fee-for-service, but actually extinguishing disease by proactive action. Find this tool is like a laser power tool to go in and do their craft.
And, I think, well, first of all, unfortunately, as happens every time, we're out of time and we could talk much, much longer. So unfortunately for that, but just to put a button on what you were saying, Dr. Pete, the big push is looking more and more that COVID-19 is going to accelerate this value-based care, right? More capitation, because everybody's now seeing the risk of fee-for-service revenue. And if it shuts off, you're out of business, right? So really exciting time for all of us that are involved in moving forward. I want to say thanks to you both. Really enjoyed the conversation. As always, hopefully sometime in the future we can catch up. Thank you to the audience for tuning in. You can learn more about the show on the programs page on healthcarenowradio.com and lend your voice to the conversation on Twitter at #VoicesInBBC. And be sure to follow SPH on Twitter at SPH Analytics. Of course, you can find me on LinkedIn. And again, I'm Matt Fusen, bringing you the voices in value-based care you should hear. Until next time, have a great week.